Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2018. And Martin Lichtmes is here. He had some technical problems earlier on, but he's resolved them. We don't have long because I've got another hangout due in half an hour, but we thought, well, we might as well do something rather than nothing. So, Martin, welcome to Millennial, and thank you for coming on.
Hello, thank you for inviting me. Good to see you again. I'm a bit sick, so I might be maybe a bit down or slow. So I just have to recover.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. It's a bit of a bad winter. I've got a sort of cold as well, sort of flu or something that has been going for like 3 weeks now, and I'm almost over it. So. What was the other thing I was going to ask you beforehand? Well, why don't you introduce yourself briefly to the audience, just in case anyone didn't watch your fantastic performance in last year's Millennial.
Right. Well, okay, my name is Martin Lichtmes. I'm an Austrian, and I'm aligned with German New Right and also with the identitarian movements. I wrote several books. I also translated a few. Most famously is my translation, my German translation of Camp of Saints by Jean Raspail, which is a book most of you might know. It's a classic anti-immigration dystopia. And so this is basically what I do. And sometimes I appear on the internet on some strange YouTube channels. I don't have one of my own yet, but I'm planning, I'm kind of procrastinating this.
Oh, right. Okay. So I'll just ask, because we didn't have any time to plan what we were going to talk about here. So I'll just ask you, how has 2018 been for you? We met in Magdeburg, of course.
Yeah, it seems so long ago by now. I see. Yeah. Well, 2018. Well, it was a great, very interesting year for me, but this is not what we're going to talk about. I mean, in political sense, you had this guy on your channel, Carter's speech. He explained a lot about Austria and Austrian politics, and they made indeed a very favorable turn. There's this this monster called the UN Migration Pact, which has been signed now by several countries, and only 5 countries resisted. I mean, there were more that said they would, but it was Poland, Hungary, Israel, and USA and Austria, which is amazing, you know. I couldn't believe it when they actually renounced it. It was the first time after many years that I felt this government's actually doing something for me, you know, and for the welfare of my nation and my people. And so I'm very happy about this, you know. And I'm also happy about, I think we talked about this before, I'm also happy that Austria and Hungary are now, you know, aligned again, you know, confronting globalists. It's one thing I dream of a bit, you know, to have some kind of Eastern European state, European Union, including Austria, and this would include most of the Habsburg nations and countries and so. But, you know, it's a dream. So this was a good thing. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know. What do you think? I don't think it was such a spectacular year. In other years, more significant things happened. So far, I don't know. I can't recall anything really, really awesome or great.
Sorry about that. I was just checking the live chat. Yeah. No, it was a fairly boring year. I'm trying to think. And in Britain, the Brexit thing
it drags on and on and on.
Yeah, and basically, it seems like it's just defeated at this point. It's not really going to happen.
They made it as nasty as possible. Ah, there's one thing that recently made me cheer up a bit. You know, this was of course in France. This yellow West's uprising, you know, this is a quite exciting thing what's happening here. And I also don't mind if there's a little you know, riot. I love to see riot porn and so. And this is a very interesting thing. Alain de Benoist said this is populism in its purest form. No, it really comes from the middle and working class, and also of the white, you know, the whiter parts of the country, which are being neglected by the great cities. the problem of France is that it's very centralized, and of course you have this globalist puppet reigning, and there's this, and now they pay him back, and yeah, this was something really, really exciting. I liked a lot, you know.
Yeah, but no one seems to know whether it's left or right wing or both at this point. Or even whether that still matters, even. I'm not even sure that that question still matters. Look, I'm starting to feel like the only problem is the internationalist progressive, you know, the establishment at this point. I can see all of these forces that like agree on very little uniting just to get rid of the establishment.
Yeah, well, I would say this is in many ways a logical step, because if you look at the establishment, it's not right or left. You know, globalism is something different. It combines free market with cultural Marxism. This is my formula of it. Somebody else would put it differently. So we have big business. We have Renaud Camus calls it the Davos, you know, Davos, the place in Switzerland where the World Economic Forum meets. And this is where they decide about things like the migration pact. So big business wants these things to happen. And on the other hand, these are the same people that are enforcing cultural Marxism and leftism inside of nations. I mean, France is a nation that is very controlled by the state in many ways. People are getting taxed their asses off. And I think when a cultural anxiety, you know, of being dispossessed, and economic anxiety are combined, and this is what happens in France, then it goes boom, you know. So I think the answer to globalism would be both left and right. It would combine left and right elements, you know, because globalism in itself does combine this.
Yeah, I mean, this is another example of how the left-right paradigm is becoming, well, it seems to be obsolete in many ways.
Yeah, this is what Alain de Benoist says. I mean, his formula, he says populism, left and right are down. I mean, especially in France. Look at the USA. If you're being right-wing, it does mean you are like a free market guy. But it's free market guys who want open borders, you know? So something is not quite matching here in this respect. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. And do you feel that Austria is changing in response to this situation and becoming so that it can, well, deal with it, so that it can have a long-term response to it? In other words, becoming nationalistic, sort of closing off from the globalist culture. Do you see the first signs of that, or am I just completely making that up?
That's the thing about Austria. I read somewhere that the star sign of Austria, I don't know how they calculated it, but the star sign of Austria is Libra. Okay, I know it sounds like a big bullshit now, but Libra is for equilibrium, you know. And Austria is a country that was always a kind of bridge between Western and Eastern Europe. Back then in the communist era, we were surrounded. We had a border to three communist countries. We were a neutral state. The Germans and the Slavs are right on the border of Austria. And now this is amazing thing happens, except for Israel and USA, the only two countries that contradicted the migration pact were Poland and Hungary. Yeah. So we have Eastern European countries that have very different policies than Western countries. And now Austria joins them. What is happening here? This is amazing, because we are, of course, culturally or economically, we belong to the West. This is very clear. Yeah? And Austria's government display a strange thing. It's a bit a kind of a good cop, bad cop thing going on here. We have Chancellor Kurz, which is the you know, mainstream conservative party, and Vice Chancellor Strache, the Freedom Party. I think Cato's speech explained it all. And Kurz is cuddling up with Brussels. He's cuddling up with Soros. But he's doing things, you know, that are actually congruent with what the Freedom Party wants, you know. So I don't know what is happening. Some call him an opportunist. I think it's a bit like the Godfather principle, saying keep your enemies closer than your friends, you know. And I think Austria would not want to really get out of the European Union because we don't want to become economically like the Eastern countries. We want to stay economically rich as we are, but the policies in regard to immigration and other things might change, you know. So they might still be there. The thing is about Libra being the star sign of Austria, whatever that means, I read it somewhere, it's interesting, is that Austria is never this or that. It's always this one and as well this one. It's not either or, but it's always both. We are always in a balance, you know. This is our historical role. This is also what you typically find in books about the Austrian mentality, about Austrian politics. It has to do with our geographic parts in Middle Europe on this border between East and West. So, I think something interesting could happen here, especially also this, we talked about this left-right thing, you know. There will be both left-wing and right-wing elements. Maybe Austria can also be a trendsetter. I think the Freedom Party has kind of lost its social side, you know. They have also a free market liberal wing, and they used to go into election campaigns with the slogan the Social Homeland Party, the Soziale Heimatpartei, and they lost kind of the social thing, which is
Heimat.
Heimat.
Wow.
Right. Heimat. Okay. We are the party of the Heimat, you know, the homeland party. The word Heimat is not properly translated as homeland. Heimat is a very specific German word. It has aura and feeling.
Yeah, it's like Volk.
Lost in translation completely.
No, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. So you're talking about that part.
You have to interrupt me because then I just go on monologuing, following my train of thoughts.
Oh, that's fine. That's honestly fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll have to interrupt you in 15 minutes because I've got to stop the hangout at that point. But, you know, until then, you're free to just talk.
Yeah, I see. So this would be my answer to Austria. Maybe we shall talk about something else so we cover more issues. Do you have an idea?
Hold on a second. There's a super chat. Martin, do you and Austrians in general consider yourselves German in an ethnic sense?
That's funny. This is a classic question.
Yeah, of course.
Our first videos we ever did when you visited Vienna was exactly about that. And, well, it's a long story.
But of course, you've got ancestry from all over.
Yes, I have. I will answer it like this, you know, it's complicated. It's another one of those not either or questions, but it's a question of both, you know. So I would say most people in Austria today, they don't consider themselves as Germans anymore. People like me do, because unlike those other people, I have a historical consciousness. And it was until 1945, this is where something happened which cut this down. I don't remember quite what it was. The consciousness changed, you know. Before that, Austrians regarded themselves as Germans, or let's say as a tribe of Germans, as a part of Germans. You know, like there are different Germans are actually very diverse. There are Saxons, there are Bavarians, there are Swabians. There are all kinds of Germans, and they have different accents, they have different mentality, and Austrians are a part of this. So I would say, there was a time when Austrians got quite angry when people want to impose on them to decide, are you now German or Austrian? And they would say, no, we are both, you know. So it all goes back, if you consider the Habsburg Empire, which was an empire of many peoples, many nations. It was a multinational empire, but it had a German supremacy of sorts, a German guiding culture. German was the language of the army. German was the culture that was everywhere spoken and understood. So the Germans were the people of this empire, the Austrian Germans, that were those that ruled and created it. Like in the Hungarian part, it was the Magyars. You know, I call them Magyars. It's also the Hungarian part had also many nations, Romanians and all kinds of people. So there is always a question who in a multinational empire who rules. who imposes the culture, who is the guiding culture. And Germans in Austria at that time, some of them, they wanted to have the greater German thing. You know, they wanted to unite with the Prussian Empire and create the greater Germany. But some didn't. But this didn't mean that they would renounce the German nation. Only being part of the nation doesn't mean you have to be in the same state. This is not the way Germany was thinking until maybe 1870 when this unification came. And this is more like a French kind of thinking. So I consider myself, of course, part of the German nation in a broader sense. But being Austrian is something specific. You know, I'm not, in that sense, I'm not the German greater nationalist that I think all Germans should be united into one empire. But I believe Germans or the Austrians are distinct just as the Swiss are. The Swiss, technically, you could say they are Germans, but they have been so long going their own way that they speak even a different kind of German, which you don't understand. You need subtitles when you watch Swiss German movies. They speak like I don't know, dwarfs, goblins, or hobbits. Very weird. And they can immediately.
You're gonna get my channel taken down with racist remarks like that.
Hit on the Swiss. No, I love the Swiss. The Swiss are lovely. I love this accent. It's very curious, but they are spooky in that way. They can immediately switch to this normal standard German and then switch back to their strange Hobbit language, which is strange. But some Germans say this about Austrians as well. Yeah, so this would be my answer in brief. You know, I could go on forever about this issue.
Mm. Well, I'm wondering what else to ask you, because I see this has all been put together in a huge rush. So, and I know that we've only got like 15 minutes left. Mm-hmm. So, if there aren't any other questions for Martin, then you know, be quick and post them quite quickly for me.
Okay.
Help me out.
I have an idea what I will talk about for the last, how many minutes have we left?
15.
15 minutes. Okay, maybe not all 15 minutes. See how it goes. You know, I have been thinking a bit about European Union and what you can learn from the Habsburg Empire. And the thing is, I get asked about this a lot. What do you think about Europa, European Union? And now we have this thing happening that those that defend the European Union in its current states, I call it Brussels to make it short, yeah? they always try to identify this completely with Europe. They say, if you are against this European Union, you are against Europe. You're an anti-European, you know. You want to shut yourself off. You're an evil nationalist and all this. And this is, of course, a nasty propaganda trick. And I think the answer should be no. Actually, we people who believe in patriotism or nationalism, we are actually the good Europeans. We are the ones that want Europe, because the thing is, this is one of the lessons of the Habsburg monarchy, that if you have a multinational union, you need to build it from below and not from above. To build it from above is the French way. The French way is centralizing. And this is what is at this moment cracking down in France. It's not working, because this rule from above, the centralized rule, has neglected the parts. Yeah, and Brussels is doing the same.
Yes, I was going to say, it's the same mentality in Brussels.
Absolutely the same mentality. And they try to impose a certain idea or policy on every nation they have. And these are, of course, globalist ideas. And, of course, European Union is supporting multiculturalism, mass immigration. And they want to post this on all nations. And now they are biting their teeth on Eastern European nations who don't want it. And now some Western European nations do it as well, Italy and Austria and others. So there is this mistake to think it from above and centralized, and the correct way, and this was the Austrian way. They did not always do it this way, but when they did it this way, it worked best to build it from below to above. You have the region, you have the broader county, then you have a country, And you try to keep all these cultures, languages, and keep them intact. Austrian-Hungary Empire worked this way. So German was the dominating culture. Everybody understood it, but it did not attack local nations or local cultures. They had completely free, or most of the time they were completely free to exist as they want. And but you know, nationalism rose in the 19th century. The Czechs wanted to have their own states, which is a problem because Bohemia was half German, half Czech, and all these problems ensued. And this has been on my mind for some time to think about a European idea which is opposed to the Brussels centralism. And I guess I'm also a bit opposed to Greg Johnson here, who says empires are no good. You know, he's against empires. He says all these little nations say, yeah, well, I think of a sort of European empire, but it would be not a federation. That's the French word, federation, which means from above, but a confederation. The Confederate States of Europe, and they make a secession to this fucking Brussels Europa. Yeah, this would be my idea, because I think it's important to think on a broader European level, because we are all targets of the same policies. You know? We are all targets of this mass immigration, of great replacement, and all this kind of thing. So we have to think. I mean, I have to think not only for myself. When I think just for Austria, will we get away? Will we become a second Switzerland? We will hide in our Alpen bunker and we will get away. Everybody else will become Muslim, but we will not. It's stupid. You know, it would not work that way. And especially we have to consider Germany. Germany is the country in the middle of Europa, similar like Austria, but bigger. You know, it's the country of the middle. It's the heart of Europe. And if Germany is destroyed, Europe will fall. The rest of Europe will fall.
Absolutely, so, including Switzerland and Austria.
All of this, yeah. But I care about this, you know. I care about Italians. I don't know people who are complaining about Salvini. He's a god. I mean, he's really a god. He's doing such a great job. He's astonishing. He does a great thing every day. He's the better Trump. He does everything that was really promised, and he's not even president. He's an interior minister, and he does a great job. And I think if you are really caring about Italy, I mean, Italy, one of the most wonderful countries in the world, you should care about this. You should care about Italy not becoming Africa. So we cannot think just egoistically for ourselves. We have to think on a broader European level.
I completely agree. Mm. I don't want to bring Greg into this when he's not here, but I mean, I don't share his aversion to empire. I do think it's part of the human condition.
I understand it completely. Yeah.
What do you mean?
I understand his aversion to empire.
Oh, so do I. So do I. I just think that it's sort of, I just think it's a bit mistaken. I think that it is part of the male drive to build, to expand, and to conquer, and to overcome things. And you know, the natural way to do that is empire. Now, whether that's right or wrong is kind of irrelevant. Morally right or wrong is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I think it just happens, and so might is right. No, but it works. And that's how it seems to happen. So what I'm not saying that it's good or bad. I'm just saying I think it's inevitable. And so I think the European countries, I mean, demonstrably do need to work. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we cannot protect ourselves as individual countries. That simply is not going to happen. It's not possible. It's not feasible. We do have to work together to do this, and it makes sense that something collective is going to emerge from that cooperation, but it should be organic, as you say. It shouldn't be from the top down, because it just doesn't work.
The idea about how the Austrian Empire worked and why it did not work in the end, I think it can also make you think about Brussels and the question of the language, for example. You know, I said there was this kind of German dominating culture, but Brussels doesn't offer no such thing. There is, I mean, language is a very divisive thing. extremely divisive. Few people don't know what's going on in Finland. This is the country which has these very funny spellings and words. You look at them and you have no idea how to pronounce them. And the next thing is, it also needs an idea. Actually, I read this in a book by Carl Anton Prince Rohan. He was a kind of rival to the infamous Kutenhof Kalergi in respect to a European idea. And he said there were three things why the Austro-Hungarian Empire worked, at least for some time. And one, it was, it had a transcendental idea. This is very important. The emperor was from God. You had still an emperor until 1918, which had a sort of medieval idea of being anointed by God. And it was Catholic. I mean, it was very liberal in religions, but there was the spiritual basis. The next thing is, it had a huge, it was clerks and military. And the clerks and military still today have a basis. There's a basis idea how a state works, how a state is being ordered, which originates back to the 18th century, and it still makes Austria work today. There's an ethos of clerks. You know, they have a sense of duty, they have a sense of honesty, they have a sense of honor, and also the military had it. So these were those that kept it together. So you need to have this idea. You have to have an ethos. You have to have and not these values. You know, one thing I really get annoyed is when people talk about values too much. Our Western.
Oh God, don't get me started on that. I mean, I've talked about this so much.
Yeah,
civic nationalism and all this. You know, the precious values. Fuck's sake. But to bring it back though to something else, I mean, you talked about how the Austro-Hungarian Empire had a military, and that was part of the unifying thing that allowed it to continue. Well, you know, there is this talk now of an EU army, and sure. People are scared by that. I find it scary, disgusting. But the reason is that the culture that the EU promotes. Now, you said that it doesn't promote any culture. I don't think that's true. I think it does promote, globalism and progressivism and, right. Social democracy.
Culture, yeah. And it's the idea of globalism.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't want an army that's defending globalism and progressivism.
Not this idea of an, you will see, look at what happens in France. You have a picture of what this army will be used for, not to protect our borders, but to strike down uprisings and to strike down protesters.
Well, and with the Gilets jaunes, that's we've seen the tank thing with the EU flag on it. I mean, for God's sake, how obvious could it be? I don't know if that photo was real or not. I think it was.
It was real. I saw several footages of it, and it's amazing how symbolic this is. It was the EU tank that is attacking. It's a nationalist uprising, in fact, even if these people who do it, they don't have this conscious yet, but they are there. The people are all of a sudden there, and it's absolutely clear. And I think this is what the future of such a terrible army. And I mean, I think it will be only an army that will be made up of how I call it, mercenaries.
Yes, probably.
Soldiers that patriotically fight for their own country because they don't have an own country. They will just be a technical mercenary paid army, you know, to strike down uprisings or protesters. This is what I think.
Yeah, and I think they'll probably not be European. I mean, they'll have European passports, but you know
this
what I mean.
This would be even scarier.
Oh yes,
the possibility. Yeah. I mean, lots of unemployed refugees. People from Syria who have been through war, they know what it's like, war. They cannot do anything else. What a great idea to give them an employment, to make them into sort of globalist soldiers.
Yeah.
Used for this cause in a different sense.
Terrifying, isn't it? It's so cold and uncivilized and immoral, inhuman. But you'd have these awful faceless bureaucrats in Brussels,
mm-hmm.
being supported and by these non-white, non-European mercenary soldiers who are just going and slaughtering Europeans. That is absolutely awful.
It's awful, and if you look at their policies, I mean, they are not openly saying it, they're saying it in cold words when they talk about diversity, but the policies are mass immigration, and this is nothing else but a sort of army, an invasion. It's invasion. So they allow an invasion into Europe for what for whatever reasons. And this would be just the logical conclusion to make an actual army of some of those, you know, to create an actual army. I don't know. Did you see these videos of Juncker where he's fondling the blonde woman's hair? There are also these videos where he staggers around and obviously is drunk. I mean, this man is so pathetic. Isn't it scary to know that men like this are ruling in Brussels? And these
Well,
are.
it makes me think that he's not ruling, and he's just a face. You
All
know,
right.
it's actually civil servants or something who are actually making the decisions because they are smart.
Could be, sure. Okay, he's surely just as to say a commissar, you know. He's not Stalin. He's just a functionary, a big one of them, but just a functionary. And these are those that decide, you know. They always talk about democracy. But how can there be a democracy? There is no democracy. The European Parliament is basically nothing. It's just an alibi just to talk a bit. The Commission is doing all the decisions, the laws, but who elected them? There are people that never were directly elected, only in a proxy way. So there's an elite, has been elite created that cannot be put down anymore by democratic means. And at the same time, they are saying, we are the Democrats. Populists are anti-democratic. Populists are fascists. In fact, in a strict sense, populists are the essential Democrats, essentially democratic. Populism is essentially democratic. And what they are saying is democracy is just is liberalism, which is not the same. It's a form of the form of liberalism, which has become increasingly totalitarian.
And it's not democratic in a meaningful sense. It has the appearance of democracy, and
That's the buzzword.
But it has absolutely no interest in what the people actually want or what is good for the people, in fact.
Or who the people are. There's no
Or
clue
indeed.
who the people are. This idea of democracy is basically, you know, simply said, treat everyone equal. Treat everyone who arrives here immediately like a citizen. The very concept of citizenship is under attack, but also the concept of being part of a people. So the civic nationalists, of course, they are on this level. It's an important level, the idea of citizenship. But there's also, of course, a deeper level. This is the level of ethnic, you know, belonging to a group. And these are under attack. So they have no concept of a people. And it's not for nothing that populism comes from Latin populus. It's the same as the Greek demos from democracy. It's the same word and means the people. And of course, the people has to be somebody. There's also confusion here because people can be people in an ethnic sense, but especially in France, the people are, you know, the workers, the lower classes. They have this word, the popular classes. And by this mean the non-bourgeois people, so the peasants and the workers, all this kind of thing. And these are two different concepts of people, but they are not excluding each other at all. You can easily combine it. And this is what happens here. Alain de Benoist said these parts of France that are revolting now, they are not only the classe populaire, but they're also the most French parts of France. These parts that stayed the most French. Paris is not Paris anymore, said Donald Trump. And it is, you go there, it looks like Algeria or like Africa in some parts. But these parts, they have stayed French. And it's maybe sometimes impoverished version of France, a peasant version of France, a France that is economically not well off, but it's still France, and this is revolting here.
Yes. Okay, well, we'll have to end it there because I do have the next guest that is due on, and I don't want to keep them in. I mean, it's a wonderful conversation. I'm really enjoying it, and I was looking forward to this. But maybe I'm sure we can have a live stream anytime on my live channel, so it's fine. But yes, well, I suppose we should end it there. But can you give people a good view of your clothes? Because I think it's quite, you know, you're looking cool this year, Martin.
This? I don't know. I just improvised it. This is a Russian. It's a Russian sailor's shirt. I like this kind of style, so Picasso style, and I have this pullover over it to keep me warm. I did not think much about the looks, but yeah.
I was saying to someone earlier.
Experimented this work.
I was saying to someone, it looks like Ralph Hütter has an emo son. That's the look that you have this year.
I was a goth, you know. I was a goth. I had a haircut like Cure, Robert Smith.
Oh, yeah.
There are weird photos of me. I hope they never released to the public.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been really nice having you on the channel, Martin. So let's end it there for now, and we'll try to arrange something in the new year.
Okay.
So we can have a more relaxed conversation. So I hope everyone's enjoyed this. I don't think there were any more super chats. Let me just. There was somebody who said Spencer Europe for the win. I don't know what that's what he's expecting us to say to that. And I think, yeah, that was it. Okay, excellent. All right. So this was Martin Lichtmes. Thank you for appearing on Millennial 2018. I think everyone enjoyed it. Okay, excellent. All right. I'll see you later. I'll be back very soon with Lad Society. Bye-bye for now.